Place. From the Sky News Centre at midday, there are going to be new medical checks for people who say they can't work and need incapacity benefit. A pilot scheme is being launched in two areas, Aberdeen and Burnley, to assess people for what jobs they can do. Meanwhile, research group, the Centre for Policy Studies, says Britain has more households where no one works than any other major European country. The report's author, Dr. Peter Warburton, says it's often due to a lack of options.
The emphasis has been placed too much in the past on generating, you know, well-paying middle-class jobs. We need to concentrate at entry-level, reasonably paid jobs in local communities, and that's where government funds should be applied.
Whitehall is responsible for a staggering waste of money, according to business tycoon Sir Philip Green. He's been reviewing government spending and says billions are unnecessarily being spent on things like mobile phones, stationery, and rent for buildings that aren't even being used. A minute's silence has been held at the start of the inquest into the 7/7 London bombings in 2005. The names of the 52 innocent victims who died in the attacks were read out. The inquest will examine if anything more could have been done to prevent the atrocity or save lives. George Michael's been released from prison after serving half of his 8-week sentence for crashing his Range Rover while high on cannabis. The singer has left High Point Prison in Suffolk. The Queen will officially name a huge new ocean liner named in her honour at a ceremony in Southampton this afternoon. The Queen Elizabeth is Cunard's replacement for the QE2. Cunard's president, Peter Shanks, will show the Queen around the vessel.
We'll take her straight up to the bridge, having introduced her to the captain. We're hoping that she will hoot the ship's whistle, which we'd be very proud if she were to do that. And as we go around the ship, we'll have many of our ship's company on hand to cheer and to welcome her and to make her day very relaxing and very special.
And the winner of this weekend's £113 million EuroMillions prize still hasn't come forward. They're losing out on £8,500 interest a day. That's the latest. I'm Chris Giles.
Bristol Community FM 93.2.
Here's a John Peel fact. When he got married in 1974, one of John's bridesmaids was his sheepdog, Woggle.
You can find out even more about one of radio's greatest presenters and celebrate his life with us here on BCFM on the 11th of October, the date of his last broadcast in 2004. Join us for John Peel Day on the 11th of October. It's a day all about John Peel and nothing else.
Something for you to look forward to. Jot it down in your diary now.
BCFM is the community radio station for Bristol and is here to give everybody in Bristol a voice.
So this is BCFM on 93.2 FM online. We continue with John Peel Day and this is Blur.
Don't leave me alone.
to Bristol Community FM on John Peel Day 2010. This is Andrew Parsonage with you through until 1 o'clock today on a broadcasting marathon of some fantastic shows and great music. I'll tell you a little bit more about what's coming up over the next, goodness me, is it 12, 13 hours still? Got a long way to go yet, so I hope you got your coffee and your supplies there because we're in for the long haul today. But we've got some great shows ahead, so I'll be telling you about those in the next hour. In addition to exclusive interviews with Michael Eavis, Trevor Fry, plus music from Radiohead, The Orb, Spiritualize and The Smiths. And that was Blur there. And I'm turning to a bit of a train spot here, Clive. I'm a bit worried, actually. I've got my list of stats next to me. I think I'll have to throw these away because I'm going to get abuse from the listeners about being a bit of a stato here. But did you know, continuing our sort of themes of did you know about John Peel sessions, that Blur were the first band to play a session recorded, or record a session rather, at his farmhouse in Suffolk. And On Your Own was actually one of the tracks from that session. Did you know that, Clive?
I didn't know that. I've learned something.
Do you feel richer for knowing that?
I do, actually, yeah. Strangely fulfilled now, Andrew.
That's good. Well, I'm pleased. I'm fulfilling my remit. That's the main thing. So, look, one of the highlights of this hour is the fact that Bristol Community FM were very kindly allowed into the hallow, within the hallow walls of Worthy Farm down in Somerset, and for the uninitiated, that is HQ for the world's probably most biggest and most popular festival, which is Glastonbury. Now, John Peel had very strong Glastonbury connection, as you know, so up until about 2004 he was presented the BBC TV coverage, but way before he appeared on TV at Glastonbury, he was sort of behind the scenes looking at the new bands, often could be seen walking around on site. And I went down to speak to Michael Eavis just about 2 weeks ago on a lovely sunny Thursday afternoon in the heart of Somerset. And it was very, I've got to say, Clive, it was very bizarre going down there with empty fields and no hippies anywhere.
Don't quite get the atmosphere, do you, really?
It was a bit surreal, to be honest. Probably the most surreal interview I've ever done, actually, but there you go. So I spoke to Michael, and one of the first questions I asked him was about the first time he actually came across and met John Peel.
Oh, gosh, it was about 30 years ago, I reckon. Before he came to work here, I mean, he worked for us probably for about 20 years, though, and he's been dead, 6 years? So it was probably 3 or 4 years before he came to work for the BBC TV. I saw him at the NME Awards, and I got the Godlike Genius Award, and he got something else, or he had it the year before, and he had to give it to me or something. But it was a little bit kind of grumpy about it all, and I mean, I was excited to win something, although I've been winning a lot so since then. But that was probably my first sort of big one, the big sort of pop award. And so he had to present it to me rather reluctantly and kind of grumpingly, I thought. And I sat with him and his wife at the table, you know, for the dinner thing. And I didn't find him incredibly friendly or engaging or anything. And I got the feeling that he'd rather not be there, really. I was enjoying myself and making the most of it. You know, I was there with Jean and... We're having a good evening because the good time was had by all, really. Except for John. Maybe he didn't like to go to the pop things or something. And I think he'd rather be sort of snuggled away in a cottage in Suffolk or Norfolk, wherever it is. And so just get on with his radio station, with his radio show, I think. Although he did latterly, of course, he came to work with BBC TV. And he did a wonderful job for us, you know, on the TV stuff. And, of course, he was the authority on all the new bands, you know, the Smiths and Pulp and all that kind of thing. So he came every year with the TV, and he did his job really well. He wandered around the site. He went everywhere. He told me he only did it to get his family free tickets because he didn't get paid, so-called. And Andy Kershaw said, because he did it, a little bit of workforce as well, and of course he was more of a woman sort of person. And he said, "Well, I'll do it when it came to wages." And so he said, "I'll do it for the same money as John Peel." You see, and so I said, "Can we shake hands on that?" He said, "Yeah." He said, "Well, he does it for nothing."
Sounds like a good deal to me. That
but I do provide him a little caravan. So I had to get a little caravan for Andy, and Andy did it for nothing as well.
John Peel died in 2004, around about, I think it was almost this time 6 years ago. Can you remember where you were when you first heard the news of his death?
But you know, I was probably milking cows, I expect. It's probably the radio in the milking parlour, I think. But I heard it all there. I heard the death of Elvis Presley there as well. John Kennedy's death, and then there's John Peel's death. But those are the three major things, I think, for me, probably.
And so would you rank those three in order of magnitude? That they
were... for me, because I've been so involved with it, with his new band stuff. I used to ring him and get advice from him about some of the bookings and things. So it was a big deal for me. I mean, that's just a parochial view, obviously, for me, because I was involved, you know. But so that those three people, they were really important to me, you know. 1, 2, 3, you know, Elvis Presley, John Kennedy, and John Peel. I'm not saying that John was as famous as the other two, but to me, I mean, it was a very significant occasion, and I do remember it, yeah.
Obviously, Glastonbury is still an incredibly successful event, but back then, do you feel that the festival lost something when John died?
I wouldn't say so. I mean, we've got the John Peel stage in his memory, of course, and we're still booking all those new bands that he used to do, but Emily and Nick are very good at that anyway. I'm not very good on the new ones, although I did, as I went for the Smiths, I also went for Arctic Monkeys before anyone else did, like both of the, and also Oasis as well. So I'm quite good at recognising the bands as with their first record, you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. These days I leave the booking of new bands or the John Peel stage to Emily, Nick and to Martin. You know, Martin Elborn is also involved with it. And so the three of them, they do the booking for that stage, and I don't get involved with that anymore.
Well, your very first headline act was Mark Bolan, and this is an artist that you and John actually have something in common with, because as well as being your first headline act, it was quite a close associate of John in the early days of Mark Bolan, who for younger listeners is associated with a big band called T-Rex. That aside, there was a great story about you and Mark Bolan when he came down to the site here in his velvet-covered Buick, and you were told off for stroking his car. Is that right?
On my very first occasion of ever meeting with a rock and roll star, this was, and I was all very jolly and very excited about him coming, you know, and it was my very first show, and it was on day one, because there were only 2 days anyway, and so I was excited when I heard he was coming down. So through the village, you know, through what we call Muddy Lane, which normally is quite a muddy track, but on this occasion it was dry weather, so thankfully, otherwise he wouldn't have come down, I don't think. And so we drove on down. It was quite a narrow sort of farm track, you know, lots of thorns and things. And so he finally arrived, and he was kind of grumpy when he arrived. He had this great American thing that was about 6 feet wide, you know, and... But coming down through a narrow farm track, it wasn't really suitable. So when he arrived, I was waiting to him, waved and stopped him and shook his hand and said hello. And you know, so nice to see you. And I said, well, nice car. I just put my hand on it, you know. And he said, don't touch my car, man. I said, my God, what's wrong with him? Because he's quite angry. And I was just smooth it, because it was all covered in... sort of red crimson velvet stuff, and of course he was a glam rock originator before Bowie, really, and so he started the whole glam rock thing, and of course he had this car to match.
Times have changed and moved on.
Yeah. We'll be right back.
good for my voice, but you won't fool the children of the revolution. Now you won't fool the children of the revolution. Now, now, now.
To go back to something we were talking about earlier about recognising and picking up on talent and getting them on stage.
Well, here at Glastonbury. I think he's probably better at it than I was, but I think he was doing it all the time, and I was milking cows and working and bringing out kids and all that. So I wasn't full time on it, but John was, I think. Yeah. You know, and he went everywhere listening to new talents. His whole life was all about that.
So was he almost like an official member of the festival team in terms of almost like a music consultant in a way?
Well, I wouldn't say that. No, I probably spoke to him once a year. I wasn't very often. And when I had a particular query at the time, I'd just ring him, you know. It was only once a year job. It wasn't. Then we weren't engaging him for long term, you know what I mean? So it was just one off phone calls, really.
Michael, just something else I was keen to explore with you is that you and John seem to me to be very similar people, and that you're very grounded in the communities that you work or operate in, and you weren't fazed by the people that you came into contact with. Mm-hmm. Do you think, in a way, you could have been separated at birth almost?
We're the same weight. I mean, we got. We're the same kind of age, aren't we? I'm kind of middle age, lots of kids, and with a general interest in music. I think that's what we've got in common, I think, basically.
And from working here on the site, I know you're occupied with more the logistics here, and John was doing the music. Any interesting recollections of seeing John around the festival site in years gone by, and the kind of things he'd get up to?
Not really. I remember he went up to the. The Crosslont Nerve stage and listening to a local band and just saying that they were absolutely fantastic, and actually I forgot the name, but actually I know the parents of the children and everything. I said, well, it's surely of this whole site, they can't be the best thing you've seen this weekend, because that's what he was saying, you see, and so I thought he was exaggerating the truth there, but they're never heard of again, that band. So occasionally he got it wrong. I mean, he went off on a tangent looking for something really teeny-weeny, you know, in the most obscure of his venues. And he sort of cracked it up to be the next big thing, but it wasn't always right. In that case, he was definitely wrong.
OK. We talked about the John Peel stage earlier as well. Obviously, it's a very well-established part of the festival now, and probably one of the more better-known stages after the Pyramid. I just want to ask you about the legacy that you felt John Peel left, both for the festival and in a broader sense.
His choice of bands, you know, which, of course, Glastonbury now are very famous for having chosen bands that were that broke here: Coldplay, Oasis, Radiohead, The Smiths, Arctic Monkeys. These are all breaking bands of ours, really. And John. So help to choose those bands, I suppose, in a funny sort of way.
Final thing I want to ask you, just moving on from John Peel, it'd be rude of me not to ask, but next year, if I understand rightly, it'd be the last time that you organise the festival, that you'd be taking more of a back seat after 2011. Is that true?
Who told you that? No, that's not true at all, no. But no, I haven't. I've got no inclination to retire at all, and I'm enjoying it more than ever I have been, I think, because it's going so well, there's so much to be done. And we're on a bit of a roll at the moment. You know, we've sort of certainly taken the lead, I think, in the whole festival worldwide. We just won the best festival in the world at Los Angeles for the fifth time. So no, I'm not walking away at the moment.
Okay. Did you actually go to the award ceremony for that, or did you?
Yeah, I did go last time, but not the time before. So I presume we're going to win it again, because this is the best year ever, isn't it? This year that's just gone. Yeah. But no, I got no plans to walk away, at least for another 5 years. And Emily's doing more, you know, and she getting more involved as her and Nick, and there's Martin, you know, who are so responsible for the main of the lineup. You know, but I do pick the headliners myself. And sometimes a second on the bills as well, but I leave the rest of the booking to all these other people. So I deal with all the local stuff, the village and the local council, all the farmers, landowners, drainage contractors, building works, and headliners. Okay, that's my job.
Okay, and a final question. Obviously, long way off yet, but any hint as to who might be down here in Pilton next summer?
Well, we've got the three best headliners that we've ever had, quite seriously, and I'm absolutely thrilled to be. I can't tell you who it is though.
Fair enough.
Okay,
Michael, once again, thank you very much indeed for taking time out to speak to us, and obviously best of luck with next year's Glastonbury, and fingers crossed for the sixth best festival award, fingers crossed.
So thanks for coming down. I shouldn't take anything for granted, but I'll be disappointed if I don't get the Los Angeles Award this year.
Do you think you'll make it out to California?
Yeah, we'll be flying out again. Yeah, we will be, yeah.
Excellent. Michael, once again, thank you.
Yeah, thank you very much for coming down.
nothing to fear, nothing to
You listen to Bristol Community FM on 93.2 FM and online on the internet. Very good afternoon to you. This is Andrew Parsonage, and that was Radiohead. And before then, you heard the dulcet tones of Mike Leavis talking to us live. Well, not quite live, actually. It's almost live from his Glastonbury living room. I think it's fair to say. So Clive, we're just chatting just now, and to explain to people listening that we were sat in the lounge of Worthy Farm, which is this sort of sprawling, beautiful old stone farmhouse in the middle of Somerset, and in the background, I think Emily Evers was actually next door.
Was she making the tea, Andrew?
I should have asked her. Actually, one of my regrets was when we went to do the interview, I knocked on the door. That's totally clear. Can you imagine? Here's me. I'm sitting on this farmhouse, and here's me from good old BCFM, and I got my recording gear and a little bit fresh faced, and the first time I've been down to Pilton, and I just knocked on the most obvious door that I came to, and it was Emily Evers who actually answered the door. And if anything, she's probably as important to the running of the festival as Michael is, I guess. I was wish that I'd said to Emily, well, we're doing this thing for BCFM. When you finish doing whatever you're doing, come in and join us. But so we didn't get around to it. But so, so she was next door, presumably booking bands or listening to demos or what have you. But now Michael's interesting guy, Clive.
It just sounds like a very cosy fireside chat, doesn't it? Marvellous.
It was exactly what it was, just sat in his lounge. And the thing I find absolutely fascinating about Mike Leavis, besides obviously the anecdotes about the good old days, if you like, was the fact that this guy is, he can write a letter to Bono and get artists of the calibre, or if you like, the profile of like U2, Bruce Springsteen, to come to Glastonbury. And it takes a certain kind of person to be able to do that.
Oh, I think that's amazing, isn't it, being able to do that? What power that man has now. And it's all come from a good source, hasn't it? It's all come from a good beginning. I think he's just a wonderful man through and through, yeah.
Now, Clive, you were saying that you were down at Glastonbury in the early days before it was the sort of the beer moth that it is nowadays. But
yes, I was. It was all a bit of a distant memory, but I do remember in those days, I think you got a free pint of milk or something
every morning. That must have been the first one you went to, wasn't it?
Maybe it was. A while back now. I had a very rickety old tent, I remember, which soon let in mud, water, mosquitoes, etc. Virtually as soon as I put it up. It rained heavily, obviously, because it was Glastonbury.
Yeah,
and Wimbledon was on. Always rains, isn't it, in those two times. So I was sort of almost coming down with malaria, I think, probably after the first hour or so. And then just sort of sat in the field watching these wonderful bands. Because in those days, there wasn't the huge array of stalls and areas and fields that you can go to now. It was just kind of one field with one stage, I seem to remember. The funny thing is, Andrew, I can't actually remember who I saw, but I'm sure they were very good.
Was it just a long time ago? Was that?
Yeah, and I think consuming the amount of alcohol, cheap lager and terrible cider, I think at the time, probably didn't help. And in those days, festivals, although Glastonbury even then was a cut above this, many festivals that I went to, you kind of turned up in your battered Vauxhall Viva, parked in the middle of nowhere, walked miles to a distant field, and you kind of just sat down in the middle of the field on a bin bag. Armed yourself with, as I say, cheap lager and nasty cider, stocked up on cigarettes for the weekend, and kind of just smoked and drank your way furiously through the weekend, and didn't dare move for fear of losing your spot.
Yeah, I don't think festivals have changed too much then in that time.
No, that's right, but at least you, I think there's a few more comfortable places to go when it rains now.
Yeah, I just think it's hilarious that you've got artists like Snoop Dogg sort of trying to find their way, navigate their way through Shepton Mallet to get to
Isn't that a bizarre concept? Yeah. Snoop Dogg being in Shepton Mallet full stop.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Well, there you go. That's a thought to conjure.
That's a thought, yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. And just finally, the thing that was most poignant, I suppose, about that interview was that where Michael Eavis was when he heard the deaths of, well, he said, the three of the most important people in his life.
Well, he was out milking cows, I think, for all three of them, wasn't he?
Yeah. Absolutely. And obviously, yeah, it's just funny how those three particular moments were captured in his cowshed for some bizarre reason.
I wonder how the cows took it, Andrew.
Oh, well, as long as the yield wasn't too heavy.
Exactly.
That's the main thing.
Yeah.
Excellent. So thanks once again to Michael Eavis. It was great that he was able to spare time to speak to us, because you must get so many people going down to Worthy Farm or wanting to get his views on things. But great that he was able to have time with us on BCFM. So we've got another sort of 20 minutes, or 25 minutes to go. We're going to continue now with a band who recorded several Peel sessions throughout the late 80s and early 90s, a band that was synonymous with Glastonbury. And who were the key drivers behind the UK ambient scene. This is The Orb, and this is The Blue Room. Thank you. There's the Orb there on Bristol Community FM. And our John Peel Day, we continue. And I'm going to go back to my list of stats here, Clive. Just
okay,
so
keep... I can't wait.
Okay, so my stats in the Orb are that that was number 20 on the 1992 Festive 50 list at the Blue Room.
Right.
Which I think the Orb, when they went on Top of the Pops, they actually played chess for the entire duration of that tune. There was no instruments or anything like that. There were just two blokes playing chess in parka jackets.
So, well, that's incredible, isn't it? Really,
it is amazing.
No real sort of banging dance moves then.
No, there's no making shapes at all. And then, okay, how many sessions do you reckon, Clive? I've got up my sheet here.
The Orb. I'm going for about 17.
Oh, you're not too far out. It was six, actually.
There you go. Yeah.
God bless them. The Orb, who actually got an album out tomorrow, collaboration with Dave Gilmour from Pink Floyd. And, had a few listens to that on the internet so far. It sounds fantastic. And it got a good rating in the papers at the weekend. So I'll be down to record shops tomorrow, Clive, with my hard-earned cash to buy that.
You can wear your little torches on your head that they used to wear as well. Do you remember those?
That was a KLF, wasn't it?
Well, pretty much both of them, I think. Yeah, they used to send the little torches, yeah.
Thanks for that.
Yeah, there we are. Another exciting John Peel fact.
That's the reason you're in the studio here, for random gems like that.
Yeah.
So thanks for that. Okay, we're going to carry on now. And as well as speaking to Michael Evers in the last few weeks, we spoke to the legend that is Trevor Fry of BBC Bristol. Now, Trevor's been in the broadcasting game for longer than I've been, well, not quite been alive, but feels like it. And I wanted to get Trevor's views about John Peel as a broadcaster. And, this is what he had to say down at BBC Bristol.
So this is Andrew Parsonage for Bristol Community FM, and I'm down in the hallowed studios of BBC Radio Bristol with broadcasting legend Trevor Fry. Trevor loves that title.
Yes, thank you.
He asked me to specifically mention that in the introductions. Trevor, we're doing John Peel Day on BCFM, and I was interested to get the views of an established broadcaster such as yourself on the man, on John Peel. And the first question I wanted to ask you was where you actually heard, you first heard John Peel.
I was, I think like few others, because I am of a certain age, Andrew, and I remember the first day of BBC Radio 1. It was a Saturday morning, and Tony Blackburn came on with a confounded dog. If that sort of means anything to you, I doubt it very much indeed. Suddenly we in this country were given the opportunity of hearing radio and pop radio as we'd never heard it before. On the BBC, we'd had Radio Luxembourg, and of course there'd been the pirate ships, which Bristol never had, of course. We never got pirate ships here. And Tony Blackburn suddenly started playing all this pop music, but it took quite a while before I actually then cottoned on to the fact there was somebody working late night, John Peel, who came in. I'm not quite sure if John was there right at the beginning of Radio 1 on that first day, but nonetheless, it became pretty obvious a little later that there was this character playing music you don't normally hear. And when you consider that the person that followed on from Tony Blackburn on Radio 1 on that Saturday morning was Leslie Crowther, the comedian, and we had Jimmy Young playing middle-of-the-road music, and this was, so say, the new era of pop music. And then, of course, you had the total opposite to that, John Peel, who created and gave us music we'd never heard before.
Yes, the way you described it there is almost like the anti-hero of Radio 1 when you think of Leslie Crowther on the one hand.
Well, you've got to think about what John was doing, you know, even in those early days. I'm not quite sure, again, whether in those early days he actually launched himself into playing what I would term to be off-the-wall music, something very different, or whether he was just complying with everybody else. Maybe it was something he suddenly thought, hang on, I don't like what I'm playing, let's find something different. How he managed to break through the management structure, the music structure of the then BBC, let alone the BBC of today. And by the way, this isn't knocking the BBC, and there are reasons which we'll come on to as to why radio stations need to play their specific music. But John Peel certainly brought to it not necessarily a breath of fresh air, because to many it was a breath of horror, thinking, what on earth is this? And that was John Peel's endearing joy, because he actually broke new ground. And I have to say at this point, I never was a big fan of John. But doesn't mean I didn't respect him and love what he did. But to me, it wasn't my kind of music. It wasn't, put it down to my age. But, you know, it just wasn't. But boy, oh boy, do I respect the legacy, which will always be John Peel.
So you mentioned the music there. It was anything about his broadcasting style that was maybe a little bit of an affront to you, or was it more the music?
No, I think he taught me a great deal in respect of what I do, and I'm not comparing myself at all with him. But with John Peel, it was always John Peel. we weren't listening to an icon. We weren't listening to a star. We weren't listening to a Jonathan Ross type person who comes on all singing, all dancing. Hey, here I am, here for you, wacky dacky and all. John Peel was just him. It was that laid back Liverpudlian voice. It was that ordinary bloke on the radio who you would meet in the pub most nights. And I think that was his endearing point. He wasn't an established, or should I say, a part of the establishment as far as radio broadcasters were concerned. That's what made him so unique.
So based on that, it was fair to say that up until that point, no one else had that sort of demeanour on the radio. It was,
no.
He was very unique in that sense.
Very much so. He probably got that from the pirate days when he worked with them. Where people were allowed to be individuals. But, you know, we're coming into the BBC establishment, or radio establishment as it turned out to be, and to have the freedom that John must have had, albeit through, you know, Mr. Waters, his producer, they worked together, and they just brought us something different and broke new ground, of course, of music. Up until 1967, before Radio 1, you know, you were getting your Al McCogans, your Max Bygraves still. You were very lucky. How on earth the Beatles managed to get to the fore in 1962 with that style of harsh, abrasive music? John Peel looked beyond that and said, hang on, there's another dimension here, which everybody's forgetting about. And if it hadn't have been for John and that style and that look into that added dimension, then we wouldn't, I don't think we'd have music like we have it today.
So, Trevor, you've worked in radio and different areas of radio now for 30-odd years or so. Mm. How do you think John Peel changed radio, changed the business, or changed the way in which radio was delivered?
He kept to himself. He kept his own style. But it was the music and his attitude towards the musicians that did it. What he also did was created live radio. We'd had it way before your time, Andrew, back in the late 50s with Brian Matthew on a Saturday morning, where he'd bring bands into the studio and they would play live. But with John Peel, the music they were playing live was just something, in the main, I think, at the time, you wouldn't find on record. I remember Elvis Costello, for instance, who was one of the artists that John Peel broke. He used to advertise in the NME because he had the name Elvis, but nobody would take him seriously. So he used to pay to buy advertising space in the NME to advertise who he was. John Peel said, who is this bloke? Get him in, let's do it. Elvis Costello was born, and he was sort of early punk.
Mm.
But that's what John did. He sort of picked people up from nowhere and made them into something. And albeit, you know, most of the bands, even today, you mention them, people would say, oh, I don't remember those. But nonetheless, they had that moment, their 15 minutes of fame, they had their time on radio. At least they'd established themselves, and that was the style that John had brought in.
Mm. So saying Peel's style was very much taking a punt on the unknown. Do you think radio needs to go back to that? Do you think that in the current age of radio, that maybe I guess we've learnt from Peel's style and radio in some respects, listen to some broadcasters that become a little bit more outrageous, a bit more outgoing. But do you think radio needs to go back to sort of taking managed risks with presenters and playlists?
I'd like to say yes, but we have these days so many legal constraints, so many rules and regulations, the Russell Brand, the Jonathan Ross debacle that we had. It's whether record and radio stations want to take that risk and run the risk of having to pay heavy fines and bad publicity and everything. It would be great to know you've got somebody there, and I'm sure there are one or two. Stevie Mack, for instance, might well do that kind of thing. But you need to respect the listener, which is the most important thing. You need to be able to be trusted by the establishment, by the radio establishment, whether in commercial or BBC radio. You need to be someone who they can say, right, we can leave that person alone, they can get up, because we know they're not going to overstep the mark. And you must retain this respect. And I think a lot of the problems of allowing a presenter to have free rein is they do run the risk of overstepping that mark, and it can lead you into so many problems and indeed bad publicity, which doesn't help your ratings. And maybe that's the other problem, that radio stations are constantly chasing their ratings. With John Peel, I would honestly say that John Peel never had huge ratings for the time of night he was on. But the ratings he did have, everyone was dedicated to what he was doing. So in other words, you wouldn't eavesdrop on a John Peel programme just because there was nothing else to listen to. You'd probably, if you didn't like the kind of music he was playing, switch it off. But that doesn't mean to say that the core people who listen to John, and more importantly, you know, your Paul Wellers, your established artists who have so much to thank John Peel for, you know, but whether you can get away with doing the same thing these days with all those constraints, I don't know.
Well, Trevor, we may have touched upon this already, but my last question to you is about John Peel's legacy. Mm-hmm. In your opinion, as a fellow broadcaster, someone who loves music also, what do you think was his legacy?
His legacy, in my way of thinking, Andrew, and quite simply, is he was John Peel. What you heard was what you got. He didn't try to be anything other than who he was, his upbringing, his Liverpudlian roots have never been forgotten. He never forgot that. He was just a straightforward guy. He didn't shout and scream. He didn't have to. He kept his style. He kept his identity. And that is so unusual in this day and age. And his legacy will be the fact that he changed the face of radio, and he changed, I feel, the face of music to me.
Trevor, once again, thank you very much indeed for taking time to speak to us on our John Peel Day. And it's been very interesting hearing your views on John Peel. And once again, thanks for your time.
Very well.
listen to John Peel Day on Bristol Community FM. That's Spiritualized. And that was Trevor Fry you heard before then. Trevor, absolutely lovely guy. Trevor, thank you very much indeed once again for taking the time to speak to us a week or so ago down at White Ladies Road and here in Bristol. And really, we've sort of starting to sort of think about wrapping up now, Clive. But
is it that time already?
It is that time already. And I can see our next show being put together. I've got Steve Parkhouse will be in the chair between 1 and 3, and he's got, amongst others, Strangelove with him, who themselves have done a few sessions, I believe, or they've got some Peel connections somewhere along the line, so they'll be with Steve. That's between 1 and 3. Then between 3 and 5, Maff is going to be here in the chair also, and Maff will be featuring a Bristol band called High Fiction Science, who I had listened to at MySpace over the weekend. Really, kind of an early Massive Attack sounding sort of band there, but they'll be in the studio talking to Maff about their new tunes. 5 and 6, got Lynette talking about the Home Truths connection. That's the Peel's radio for speech radio based content, which often people can overlook, as well as the music. Mark Lelievre between 6 and 7 with the chronology of Peel, and then between 7 and 8 we've got Mark and John Steele, who my understanding is John Steele was sort of the fifth Beatle of broadcasting and Peel's understudy, who never quite achieved the success of his namesake.
John Peel used to be his tea boy, is that right?
Something like that, yeah.
Extraordinary.
I think that's how the relationship works. Tony Gosling between 9 and 11, talking to a whole number of people on Peel and playing some of Peel's top tunes as well. And he'll be interviewing John Kennedy from XFM, who presents similar music stuff.
We mentioned him earlier.
Did indeed. And then, not to be missed, between 11 and midnight, broadcasting BCFM legend Steve Satan, who will be assuming the voice of John Peel for a whole
hour. Or is it John Peel himself?
Oh, I don't know. Who knows? He would play a whole hour of Fall tunes, which is why we kept the Fall free for this sort of last 2 hours. And then finally, between 12 and 1, because I know you'll still be listening by midnight, which is not too long, only sort of 11 hours to go, Michael and Magda with Peel's German Influence. So that's it, Clive. Thank you very much indeed. Thanks for joining me in the studio today.
You're very welcome. I had a lovely time. What a privilege just to spend 2 hours talking about the great man.
Oh, it's been good. An excuse to play some good tunes as well. And to you, dear listener, thank you very much indeed for being with us since 11 o'clock. John Peel Day does continue, though. Please hang around for Steve. He's coming up at 1 o'clock, or after the news at 1 o'clock. And between now and then, we'll be playing one more tune for you. But this has been Andrew Parsonage on John Peel Day, Bristol Community FM 93.2 and online. Like I say, please do keep in touch with us throughout the day. And for now, though, we're going to play out with a band called The Smiths.
Take me out tonight, where there's music and there's people and they're young and alive. Driving in your car, I never, never wanted to go home, because I haven't got one anymore. Take me out tonight, because I want to see people and I want to see light. Driving in your car, oh please don't drop me home, because it's not my home, it's their home and I'm welcome no more. If a double-decker bus crashes into us, to die by your side is such a heavenly way to die. And if a ten-ton truck kills the both of us, to die by your side, well, the pleasure, the privilege is mine. Take a strange fear gripped me and I just couldn't ask. Take me out tonight. Oh, take me anywhere, don't care, don't care, don't care. Driving in your car, I never.
BCFM is the community radio station for Bristol and is here to give everybody